welcome to Advisor Talk with Frank LaRosa. Brought to you by Elite Consulting Partners, it's the only podcast offering unfiltered guidance and direct advice for all things concerning financial advisors, RIAs, and the practitioners in the wealth management business. Learn more and subscribe today at eliteconsultingpartners.com/podcast. And now, here's your host, Frank LaRosa.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Advisor Talk with Frank LaRosa. I am Frank LaRosa, and I am joined today by a great guest I love having on. We have tremendous conversations. Scott Curtis is the president, currently the president of Private Client Group at Raymond James. And for those of you that read the press, you know that in October, he'll be taking over as the CFO of Raymond James Holding Company. And so it was timely that we were having this podcast, and his announcement came, which is great. So I'm looking forward to the conversation, and I hope you enjoy the show. Yeah, analytics is important. I love that stuff. I was just reading a book about, it was an M&A book or something, but it was just really about driving your business through analytics. It's not to be cold-hearted or make it unemotional, but you need to know the numbers so you can make decisions. So,
right. Yeah. So, the other thing that and part of the reason I wanted to dive in is because I wanted to understand, for the advisors who are growing the fastest, what are they doing that's different from those who aren't? And what resources of the firm are they utilizing what do those utilization rates look like of resources of the firm versus the people who are not growing as quickly? And what's clear is those who are the fastest growers, they on average have a higher utilization rate of the firm's resources than those who are not. And that's not terribly complicated. If you bring extra value to your clients, the likelihood is they're going to bring you additional assets or do other types of business with you because now they're aware, oh, I didn't know you did that. I didn't know I could do that with you. And if you keep your practice focus fairly narrow on investment management, you're not going to open their eyes to these other types of things that you can do, whether it's lending, whether it's private investments, whether it's a business owner and you can assist them with either raising new equity capital or acquiring other businesses or taking their business public if that's what they want to do or selling it to a PE firm. If you don't engage in that conversation, then they're probably going to look elsewhere for that capability and you're going to miss out on the business opportunity.
So I'm glad you said that. This is a great start to the podcast, which is super. I literally had a conversation with an advisor yesterday. It was a marketing client. So we have do our marketing, right? We have some Raymond James advisors that we do all their marketing for them.
Yeah.
And we're strategizing it with him, and he goes after business owners, great individual. I started talking to him about the M&A. He's newer to Raymond James. So I think he's only been there about 6 months.
Okay. Very new.
So I said, you made a right choice, right?
Yeah.
And I started talking about the M&A capabilities that Raymond James has that advisors can access that they couldn't access. I think he came from Morgan Stanley, right?
Right.
I didn't move him from Morgan Stanley, but he came from Morgan Stanley.
Yeah.
And his response to me was, I don't really get into that with my clients. I said, well, okay, wait a minute. You said your clients are business owners and you're trying to get their wealth. Yeah. Okay. So you understand that most of those business owner clients are going to have a deal at some point. They're going to have a monetization event at some point, right? He goes, oh yeah, of course. I said, so do you want to be involved in that or do you not want to be involved in that? Right. And I was going down this road with him. He didn't understand the idea that you don't necessarily have to come to them with an idea at the moment they're trying to do it. And I said
that's
to him,
right.
If you do, it's too late.
It's too late. Too late.
It's too late. They're already done. Yep. They've already signed an NDA and all that stuff with the firms, right?
Yeah, yeah. So,
but being at Raymond James, and I was basically teaching him because we've been doing business together for a long time. So I feel like I've worked at Raymond James my whole career, right? Right. And I said, you understand that just go to those clients with the story of one of the reasons why you moved to Raymond James and these capabilities about potential M&A opportunities. So John, Bill, I know one day you're going to want to sell your company. I want you to think of me to come to me first when you're starting to think about it. And oh, by the way, it should be 3, 4, 5 years ahead of when you think you want to sell.
That's right.
Right?
Yep.
So I'm like, you have to have that conversation. And even though if that client may never do anything or prospect, right? Client prospect, you'll probably get business from it because they didn't know you can do it.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Anyway,
have you been, how many of our investment banking excellence conferences have you been to, Frank? Sounds like you've been to a couple of them. I'm kidding. But that's the message. We bring a few hundred advisors in to Raymond James headquarters every year, and we take them through a day and a half. And it's how to work with investment banking, how to talk to your clients about that potential liquidity event, how to talk to them about the wealth that they have tied up in their business. And we have advisors who've gone through the process with investment banking, and they kind of give testimonials. They talk about, here's how the process worked. And I was never cut out of the process. I was involved every step of the way. And the end result, my client's business was worth more than they thought it was going to be worth. And we have more assets to manage for the client. And it did nothing but strengthen the relationship that I already had with my client. And that client is now a lifer. We'll never lose them. I mean, those are great, great stories.
Oh, right. I mean, if I was an advisor, I would be fearful all the time if I had business owner clients that at some point they're going to leave because I'm not going to be able to provide that service, even though I could have. I didn't even mention it.
That's right.
And so, So can we, let's, again, these are the practice management things that we can go down in a rabbit hole on all the time. But So you mentioned something just before about, you know, statistics and stats and KPIs and all of the other things. It's interesting now because your new title, and for those that may be listening here, right, not right at the moment, but I think in 2025.
Beginning of October. Yeah, okay, our fiscal year. Yeah.
Got it. So fiscal year of this year, October, you're gonna move over from the president of the private client group at Raymond James to the chief operating officer of Raymond James,
the holding company.
Right.
Yep.
Number one, congratulations. I think that's
thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
How do you think that, and then Paul Shoukry, who is the CFO, is going to take over as the CEO of the firm. And then Tosh Elwin is going to move up into your position.
That's right.
Right. Which is phenomenal. And then Jody Perry is head of recruiting, which is awesome. Right.
Right.
I feel like we're all like growing up together. It's just so funny.
Yeah.
Although you make a lot more money than I do.
I don't know about that, but okay.
That's okay. Talk to me about, when you look at this alignment, and I'm not going to call it that. It's a new alignment, but, it's all homegrown, right? For the most part. Yeah. I mean, you've been there a long time now, but what are you seeing with the firm, whether it's a continued change in the same direction? How do you think some of these changes are going to affect the direction of the firm, positively, negatively? And how do you feel about Paul in the position, in your role now? Like, how do you envision taking your background and what you've been doing for the last several years as the president into this new role? And are you still going to have your hands in, in the leadership side with the advisors? Because you're great at your position. That's why, I guess that's what I'm asking. Like,
thank you.
You're so good at your job and your career here with the advisors and all that. Is, if I'm an advisor at Raymond James, I won't say should I be worried, but how is it going to affect the firm?
Right. Well, I kind of reflected, Frank, when I was provided with the opportunity to move into the new role as chief operating officer. I had to kind of reflect on what are the areas of my responsibility that I get the greatest energy from? What is the most enjoyable? And that's pretty easy to put my finger on, and it won't surprise you at all. It's spending time with advisors. And said another way, spending time with my clients, who many of them now are my friends. And we'll do things away from work, totally unrelated to work, because we enjoy each other's company. Last year, I went to a Dead & Company concert in Charlotte with advisors from Winston-Salem. And that was not a work event. That was because we both enjoy, and our wives enjoy, Dead & Company music. And so we went to the concert together, and it was great. There are others this year. once Dead & Company announced that they were going to do a concert at the concerts, I should say, at the Sphere, we said, we've got to go.
Yeah.
So Memorial Day weekend this year, that's what we're doing. And I've got golf trips lined up with financial advisors because over time they become friends. And so those trusted relationships are not going to go away. And as I transition into my new role later this year, I absolutely will stay involved with Private Client Group. It's, as you know, 80% of the firm's revenue at Raymond James. But I'm also not going to step in front of Tosh as he moves into the president of Private Client Group role, or step in front of Shannon Reed, who's president of the Independent Contractor Division. I'll be in a more of a support capacity for them. I'll continue to do visits with recruits. I'll continue to do visits with clients and prospective clients. And I certainly plan to continue to participate in conferences, recognition events, where you really get to spend high quality time with the advisors. So it would be very difficult, I think, at Raymond James in almost any capacity, unless you're in the, let's say, investment banking space specifically, or you're in fixed income, or you're in the institutional investment management space, to not take advantage of those opportunities to spend time with advisors and really hear directly from them. What are the things that we could be doing that would help you be better at what you do or deliver a better experience for your clients? And it's amazing when they say, you know, you could have picked up the phone and called me, or you could have just shot me an email and shared this. Yeah, I don't want to bother you. But now that we're together in a golf cart, or now that we're together sitting on a beach, or going for a walk, or going for a hike, I think I'll just share this with you, if you don't mind, if we talk about business for a few minutes. I don't mind at all. That's partly why we're doing it. Or another one of my favorites is riding together on a chairlift. Yeah, there's nowhere you can run and hide when you're sitting together in a gondola or on a chairlift about to go ski another run. So those relationships, I think, will continue, and my focus there will continue. But now the new role, though, today, president of Private Client Group, is focused on our domestic business, and it's not focused on our Canadian business or our business in the UK, whereas in my COO role, it will really be more of a global view, and I will get involved in other parts of our business that I don't focus my time and energy and attention on today. And that's exciting for me. I'm excited for Paul Shukri to be moving into the role to succeed Paul. And the nice luxury that we have here is Paul's not going anywhere. So Paul Shukri, while he's been working very closely with Paul Riley in the CFO capacity, as he starts transitioning to prepare for taking over as CEO at some point next year, he has the luxury of working very closely with Paul, understanding more about what Paul does in that job. And I think for Tosh, as we work together for him transitioning into the chair that I'm in today, we also have a similar type of luxury where I can assist Tosh with better understanding, maybe some nuances of the independent businesses where he has not spent that much of his time during his career at Raymond James, or digging deeper in the products and the investment solutions areas and agency trading and options trading and the other aspects and components, or supervision for that matter, other aspects and components of what is the totality of Private Client Group in the United States. So the good news is, we all have very good relationships already. We work together, we collaborate. And this is just kind of turning the page to the next chapter of Raymond James. And all of us carry a responsibility to continue what helps distinguish this organization and this firm and help continue making it better. So the next question from you is going to be, okay, well, what is that? What are those areas? And I would say it's continuing to enhance our resources. We are a full-service firm, as you know, but continuing to enhance those resources and capabilities so advisors can deliver that best client experience, but do it as efficiently as possible, leveraging technology where appropriate and where it might apply. And what we know today is what the technology is that's available today. And we all know that will change over the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 years. So we have to stay on top of it without being cutting edge or bleeding edge. We want to make sure at least we're aware how do we utilize technology and where should we invest so that advisors and their clients have those capabilities, or our investment bankers and their clients and prospects have those capabilities. And that's what we spend a lot of our time focusing on, is how do we continue to make the firm better? And we can't do that on our own. I'm not sitting in the chair of an advisor every day. So I have to have good relationships with advisors, as does Tosh, as does Shannon, so that we can hear from them and from their assistants, their teams, what are the things that we need to do to make your world better when it comes to your experience with Raymond James? And we take that feedback and take that input very seriously, and we gather it formally and informally. And it works. I mean, we have advisory councils, but we don't rely exclusively on the advisory councils. We also rely on feedback that we get from advisors regarding how is your experience with Raymond James. We just sent out last couple of weeks an annual survey, and it comes from me. It comes from my email. I know, because I get all the out-of-office replies that are automated. But it comes from me, and the subject line is, tell us how we're doing. And so it's an opportunity for advisors to give us feedback on what are we doing really well, what would they like us to continue doing or do more of, and what are those things that we need to invest in, what are the things that we need to change or adjust to make their lives and their assistants' lives better. And we will pore over the feedback, and it'll help guide us in the months ahead and in the years ahead before we do the next survey again next year. But it's not a once a year process. It goes on throughout
You're hearing it throughout the course of the year. That's the whole point of building relationships. Like,
yeah,
you don't want to wait till the survey goes out and it's, you know, they've been upset about something for 6 or 9 months, or a year or longer.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And as I said, it's not a once and done. We're collecting and gathering feedback throughout the year. But this is more formal, and it goes to everybody, and it's an option. It's an opportunity for everybody to provide feedback if they choose to, but there's no requirement. And we get a pretty high response rate on it, which is wonderful.
I'm going to ask you a direct question, which wouldn't surprise you, right? That's why we talk, right?
That's right.
And I'm just curious to hear what your response is. It's not that I'm, thinking this way, but I'm an advisor. Whether I'm at Raymond James or I'm an advisor thinking about going to Raymond James, and I just heard, oh, great, the numbers guy's taking over the company, right?
Yeah.
Right? As an advisor, that's what they think, right? CFO's right. Taking over. Oh, okay, here we go. Here comes the number crunching.
Right.
How do you respond to that?
Well, I would say get to know Paul Shoukry. He's a bright guy who happens to have an accounting background. But he's also a great leader. And if you look at Paul Reilly's background, Paul Reilly also has an accounting background. And you think about the business that we're in, we are a bank holding company, and numbers and managing capital and managing the firm's balance sheet is a very important part of the CEO's responsibilities, leveraging the CFO. And if our board that went through a very diligent process of evaluating various potential candidates, I'm happy to say that the potential successors for Paul Reilly, we didn't have to go outside. And so all of us carry that same Raymond James DNA about the values and the philosophy, how we operate the business, how we think about the business, the relationship with the advisors. Paul has that same DNA. He has that same philosophy and the same values. He just happens to have that accounting background and deep understanding of the financials of the firm, which has become more and more important as we've grown as a bank holding company. As you know, we acquired Tri-State Bank a few years ago, Raymond James Bank, which has become a very substantial bank. That's become a more important part of that job, interacting with the Fed in particular, and other regulators regarding the financial position of the organization and where we're going. I mean, you could see last year, there were a few financial institutions, a few banks that ran into trouble because they got a little aggressive with their balance sheet and how they chose to try to generate incremental earnings for shareholders with their balance sheet, which we don't do. We're very conservative in our approach, and it's paid off well for the firm, associates, advisors, clients, and shareholders. And that kind of conservative long-term approach will continue. And I know Paul understands that very well. Even the hiccups, I would say, that we had last year just reinforced that our approach is the right approach, and we'll continue staying focused on that, despite what criticisms we might get from analysts who say, hey, you know, you could extend the duration on your balance sheet a little bit and maybe generate some incremental returns. Well, what happens when interest rates start going up? Then what?
Well, they don't know what that's like because they've probably never been in the business.
That's right. No, and they tend to be more short-term oriented in their focus. That's not a criticism. It's just what we've seen as fact. And so we remain focused on the long-term. The balance sheet is not where we're going to generate incremental returns for shareholders or add value to advisors, more importantly, or add value to clients. That doesn't add value to either one of those interested parties. And so it's not something we're going to do.
Right. And the reality is that Paul's been with the firm for a long time. So the culture is ingrained in him already.
That's
so
right.
It was sort of a leading question, but I wanted to hear you say it, right?
Yeah. Straight out of business school and right to Raymond James. And so it's great that he has this opportunity and that he had the opportunity to succeed Jeff Julian, who was our CFO before Paul Shoukry. And I think Jeff Julian was on the front page of the Wall Street Journal as the longest running CFO of a Fortune 400 company or an S&P 500 company. And second place was way behind Jeff. I think Jeff was CFO for more than 30 years.
Right. So that's awesome. So let's shift gears. And again, some of these are leading questions because, you know, I know the players. So now, you know, Tosh steps into your role, your current role. Yep. What are you most excited about with Tosh taking over that role? When you look at that, when you hear when that decision was made, you must have been like, perfect.
Right.
Right. Yep. Why?
I think you know this about Tosh, but Tosh actually started out as an advisor trainee with Raymond James.
Yep,
and so you talk about somebody who has grown up at the firm as an advisor, as a branch manager, as a complex manager, as a regional director, as a divisional director, and then ultimately becoming president of Raymond James and Associates, and now president of Private Client Group overall. That's a wonderful success story. And we were talking earlier about people who carry the DNA of Raymond James. Tosh lives and breathes Raymond James. He hasn't been anywhere else. And to me, that's a real positive. And so I'm excited about that. He still manages client relationships, as does Tom James. And so I think that benefits him in understanding the perspective of the advisor because he still is an advisor. We don't have a philosophy here at Raymond James or an approach or a policy that says, if you're in management, you have to give up your client relationships. We leave it up to the manager to decide, can they be effective at their job while also managing client relationships? And Tosh doesn't have the same number of client relationships that he did many years ago when that was more of his focus. But I know he still has some significant client relationships. And I think that's really healthy because he is a client of the firm's resources in working with his clients. So I think that perspective will really be beneficial.
So maybe talk a little bit about more concerns, and this is more industry concerns, more so than firm-related things, right? But when we, at the beginning of when we got on this call, we just sort of got into it, right? Which was awesome. We started talking about valuations and M&A, really more valuations. And I think what we all both agree are pretty high. Where do you see that trend going? And what are your concerns about that and how it might affect our industry as a whole?
Yeah, it's a great question.
By the way, I just want to pause for a second and let my audience know when Scott and I do these podcasts, there is no like scripted, like, oh, these are the seven questions I'm going to ask you. So this is why I love this format, because it just gets the real stuff out. So
yeah, we didn't even do that today, Frank. We just jumped in and started talking, and I noticed the recording light was on. I thought, okay, I guess we're on. which works just fine. So I think for advisors who have a team who they're working with, when they get to the point where they're thinking about maybe either downshifting or altogether retiring in some number of years, there are different options for them to sell their business. And for some of the successors who are maybe still earlier in their career, or they've been at it for a while, but they may not have the financial wherewithal to pay the multiple that the business owner is expecting, or they know they could get in what I'm going to call the open market. So for some advisors where maybe they don't have a successor identified, the focus then is primarily who's going to take good care of my clients. And so there are a number of options out there that will pay a very attractive multiple, and they will hopefully take good care of your clients. But if your interest is, what about my team? What about my staff? I want to make sure they still have a career. That's what gets to be a little bit more challenging for those internal successors, and how can they afford to pay for the practice and pay that multiple that the business owner is expecting. Now, as we've seen here, some of those business owners are inclined to lower the purchase price because they want to make it affordable, they want to make it fair, and they also feel like they owe it to the team that has helped them grow the business, manage the business over a long period of time. They don't expect that they're going to get the same multiple from that group that they would expect if they were on the open market, so to speak. So for those who want to provide a succession plan and provide that opportunity for the people who've helped them build the business, take over and actually run the business, the multiples can be pretty alarming if you're somebody, I'm going to make up numbers here. If you have to go borrow $10 million or borrow $15 million, and the collateral is the practice and the assets in the practice, that can be pretty intimidating for somebody who's never borrowed that kind of money before. And then you look at the cash flows and you start asking questions. Well, wait a minute, what if the equity markets pull back 30%, 40% for a lengthy period of time? How am I going to pay that price? So that can make some of these acquisitions a little bit difficult. At Raymond James, we help provide financing options for those internal successors and even for other advisors who are going to acquire the practice of another Raymond James advisor. So they may not be part of the practice, but they may be acquiring it. And so I think that's helpful. Where these multiples go, boy, it's hard to believe. I mean, math is math. You may remember Tom Hudson, who was at Raymond James many years ago. He now may he rest in peace. Yep. But one of my favorite lines was from Tom Hudson was, you know, there are only 100 cents in a dollar. And that remains true today. So depending on what your assumptions are around growth, around interest rates, around equity markets, that ultimately is going to lead to what you think you can justify as a multiple. And what are you going to take out in terms of expenses? And for some of the third-party acquirers, expense takeout is a large portion of how they justify the purchase prices. And if it's an internal successor, it's unlikely they're going to strip out expenses as part of their price justification, which means the multiple is going to be lower. And if I'm a business owner, that's not that hard to understand.
Right. I also think that we did a podcast on this a couple of weeks ago. I see too many advisors today, and I'll just use 10x as a, and again, it's your, for those listening, when we talk about multiples, it could be a high multiple on a different number, right?
Yeah. It could, if there's an EBITDA multiple, there's a revenue multiple. Yeah.
So, you know, don't just fall, you know, when your buddy tells you, oh, I sold my business for 15x, just say 15x of what?
Exactly.
Right. Cause it makes a huge difference.
Oh yeah.
But I see one of the mistakes I'm really worried about for folks that have worked, you know, a long, long time for building their business, and they hear these 15x, and so someone, a quality buyer, whether it's internal, is going to give them, I'm just again making up numbers, but you'll understand the principle of it 10x, right? And they go, oh no, that's not I can't sell my company at a discount. Like, that's what they think. And I've seen advisors blow really, really good opportunities because they're getting caught up in this, like, you know, it's like back in 2000, 2001, right? Where you bought a stock and it went up from $20 to $80. And I'm like, oh, I'm not selling because it's going to go to 120, right?
Yeah.
Right. And I see the same thing in a way happening right now. I'm really worried about it. I think that advisors need to wake up and understand that it's about the dollars, but it's about the longevity of that business. Because if you have a seller's note, right, and you sell to the wrong buyer and your clients leave, and you're going to be on the hook for some of it because your back end tail you're going to get less money. So
that's
your
right.
10 maybe turns into 6.
Right. Anyway. I think too, I there are numerous advisors as you get closer and closer to retiring or stepping back. I think it's important to really step back and think about what are your objectives and from a values perspective, what is most important to you? And is it taking care of your clients and making sure they're going to be well cared for? That's always going to be a priority. Is it your team? And is your team's intention to stick around? And do they want to continue to grow the business and work with those client relationships that they continue to manage today? Or is it something different and everybody's ready to retire and you really are ready to, I'm just going to say, ring the bell and maximize the purchase price for your practice? And that will lead you to different outcomes under those different scenarios. And so I think advisors really need to step back and think about, and maybe if it's with their team, hey, let's really think about what are our primary objectives here. And I've gone through that exercise with a number of advisors. And for those who are focused on their team and their team wanting to continue to run the business and get into leadership roles, work with those clients who they've worked with for so many years, that's going to likely lead to a lower multiple because they're not going to be able to afford that open market purchase price. And frankly, my perspective, they shouldn't have to pay it because they've helped that business owner build the business and run the business for a number of years, and they deserve a discount.
Yeah, it's like sweat equity kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
One more thing, and I'm just watching the clock, so I want to be respectful of your time.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about something that I think it was your, I don't say baby, but your idea. We talked about it, and Tasha, I guess, will be taking over this whole concept of this idea of advisors breaking away from wirehouse type firms, wanting to be independent, but not wanting to do everything.
Right.
Right. Not wanting to deal with the lease, you know, the leases and the furniture and the all of this stuff. Right. But they love the concept. Right.
Yeah.
And you and I had some conversations a while back about some of the ideas and the team that you already have in place at Raymond James that does it on the, I'll just say the retail side in your advisor select model, right?
W-2.
Right, yeah. Right. Can you just talk about that? Because I don't think people know that about Raymond James now, that it's this, you always had support and all that stuff.
That's right.
It's different now. So can you maybe just talk a little bit about that as we sort of go into the tail end of this?
Yeah, I would, I think collectively in total, you'd almost refer to it as consulting services. Where we can assist somebody who has not been a business owner previously and has not set up that legal entity or the LLC. Maybe they're not ready. They're not at the point where they want to establish an independent RIA. They'd much prefer to roll up under the corporate RIA. Maybe down the road, they want to establish an independent RIA, which is fine. We can assist with that. But we do have those support services who will provide not only assistance and consulting on the different, I'm going to say, questions you need to answer as you go through that process, but also what percent maybe of your revenue should you be thinking about for different parts of your business, whether it's technology, whether it's marketing, whether it's staffing. When you think about staffing, how are you going to provide incentives for the people on your team? And I know there are some advisors in the past who've tried to establish some kind of share of profits, or I want to give equity to people on my team. And there's downside risk associated with that versus providing people with other types of upside incentives, maybe that are tied to net new asset growth or tied to asset growth overall, And I would call that more of a revenue share rather than something that's actually giving up equity in your practice. You may have the unintended consequences years down the road when somebody's ready to retire. You have to write them a really big check to be able to buy back those shares. So we can assist with, we have experts here on the team who can assist with all of those things. How much should you spend on your real estate? And what are the things that you ought to think about? Again, it's what are the questions that you need to answer? And we can take you through that as we've done with many, many, many advisors before.
Awesome. Thank you very much. So listen, I appreciate you doing this. It was timely. I had just set up a call with Jody, and then you guys got the announcement. I'm like, all right, let's do a podcast.
Well, I'm always happy to do it, Frank.
Yeah, no, I enjoy the conversation. You
know we have a long relationship, and we're really grateful.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you, and I'm grateful for the opportunity. I know I say it every single time, but you know, Raymond James is a important relationship to us for a lot of reasons, and you know, Tosh, I'm excited. I knew him when he was an RD, and so it's been awesome. And so listen, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. Love the office there. It looks awesome. Love your Lincoln.
Thank you.
Your Abe painting there that's tremendous. So
big Abraham Lincoln fan.
Congratulations on the new role that you'll be taking over. I hope we can still do these when you're in that new role. It might be a great conversation to like do like 6 months after you take over the role and say like, you know, expectations versus reality. That'd be sort of cool.
Or we could talk about the differences in terms of wealth management delivery, wealth management in Canada, UK versus US. That might be interesting for people as well.
Love it. Awesome. All right, Scott, thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Great to see you, Frank. Have a great weekend, and thanks again for the opportunity.
Talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Advisor Talk with Frank LaRosa. If you're looking for more advice or solutions on any topics in the financial services industry, or you just want to subscribe to our podcast, head on over to eliteconsultingpartners.com/podcasts.